This is episode 71 of the Fifth Estate Podcast, The Politics of Sexual Harassment. All right, it is time for another episode of The Fifth Estate. My name is Jay Caruso. I am here with my co-host, Amy Otto. How are you?
I'm doing excellent, Jay.
All right.
How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. If you guys are looking, if those of you don't know, I mean, you should know by now, Amy is the new co-host of The Fifth Estate, and we just, like, finally got a chance to update the artwork. Got Amy's cartoon drawing on there. Neil is all out of the picture now completely. And so Amy's there now. So if you go and you go to the fifthestate.us or you look us up on iTunes or anywhere else, you'll see the new logo, real happy. And now we're really into this new phase. So but we're doing this. This is Thanksgiving week. We're doing a quick episode. We're not gonna have any guests. But because Amy is new still, and you know, now that you have there's a picture of her on there. Make sure now that you go out to iTunes, leave a review. We had her debut episode with Kevin Williamson was very successful. A lot of people downloaded it. A lot of people listened. That's great. We love that. And, hopefully we'll just have that continued success. So, leave us the reviews. Tell us how wonderful we are. Even if you love Neil and you hate me, at least now you have Amy that you can like, and you could still hate me if you want to. Or if you're glad Neil is gone and you said, I'm not leaving a review until that guy's out of here, now you have your chance, right?
Oh, I like Neil. I'll leave a review saying I like Neil.
there you go. All right. So, Amy, when you were a guest, like right before we announced that you were going to be the new co-host, we were kind of talking, we talked a little bit about the Roy Moore situation, but since then, so much other stuff has like taken place. I mean, new allegations against different people and, you know, now the Democrats are being embroiled in it and, you know, there's other stuff going on. Bill Clinton's name has been surfacing again. So there's lots of stuff going on here. But let's start with Roy Moore. And yeah. People were hoping he might step aside and, you know, they could get a write-in candidate or something like that. But basically he's saying, nope, I'm in this until the end. And Donald Trump came out and kind of, you know, realized, okay, this guy isn't going anywhere. I might as well endorse him. And so... You said you were reading something that kind of details some of the stuff that, you know, about him. That's just kind of gross. But, you know, what was your takeaway from that?
I there's no excuse for any of this. I don't know if this is even partisan anymore. It's just creepy. I think dating 14-year-old girls or calling while they're in school so you can get a date with them is it's an interesting strategy. Certainly it certainly creeps me out. There's a lot of Beckett Adam, who's probably one of my favorite people in the Trump era to read because he's just kind of out in his own, writing his own stuff, wrote an article like the 7 worst defenses of Roy Moore. And they're all pretty depressing, you know, defending the fact that younger women are a high quality candidates because of their purity, according to a pastor, Flip Benham, introducing that concept, so what if Moore trawled malls and high schools for teens? Jesus Christ, mother was young when she got married. This was an actual defense that Alabama State Auditor Jim Ziegler used earlier this month. So there's some really sad amount of hand waving. And I think a lot of this it's interesting to ask myself if these people would even bother to mount such ridiculous defenses if it wasn't about a valuable Senate seat. I hope that at least they're just corruptible and not genuinely believe this crap too on top of it. That's the scary thing here. The Moore piece, But I think what's been fun really is to watch the evolution of all this, not in fun in a good way, kind of fun, horrifying, like a train wreck. But, you know, since Weinstein, since this, and since it was clear, and I think most of the Republicans in Congress, I know Paul Ryan, like, basically were like, you should step down. People are considering some sort of censuring thing if he actually wins and gets seated. So largely the Republican Party isn't tying themselves to him, but I'm not sure exactly what everybody's supposed to do about it if he doesn't step aside, which is the weird situation. But then I thought the fun thing was the left took it as an opportunity with Moore to really kind of get up on their privilege and get very excited about writing about Bill Clinton and how it's, you know, it's really time to grapple with how horrible of a person he was.
I love that.
These rape allegations and all of these things. And it was just the perfect timing for that. It was all like Monday, Tuesday. And then it was like, well, maybe we shouldn't be so serious about that, because then the Al Franken thing came out. And now, like, they have to literally go back and what they said Tuesday for something that happened Thursday. And then the John Connors, and, you know, there's a lot of Democrats also. And that's why I'm trying to step aside and say, I don't think this is partisan. These men are all behaving badly and something should happen. But I find the amount of partisan horse trading and willingness to excuse things very depressing. But I did find it particularly funny that apparently now it's okay to notice that Bill Clinton had rape allegations and has been accused of rape credibly, and really, you know, lots of horrible things, and things that actually have a lineup and a more horrifying history than Roy Moore in some ways. And it's not like I have to decide who's worse, really, but I can say both are bad. But then it's been really fun, I think, to watch the left all of a sudden be like, well, we don't really want Al Franken to step down, you know?
Yeah.
That's been entertaining as well.
Yeah, it's funny because, you know, I agree with you. I'm not sitting there defending Roy Moore. In fact, I didn't like the guy even before he got the nomination. I thought he was unfit because of what had happened to him as a judge in the state. And I just thought, you know, this was ridiculous. You know,
yeah, he was already a terrible candidate.
Yeah, he was. He was. And I mean, he probably would have won. I don't know. He may still win. Who knows? I think Democrats are like, they're, you know, Democrats are hurting themselves by sitting there trying to circle the wagons now for Al Franken. And people in Alabama are going to be like, well, screw you people. You know, if you're not going to tell him to go, then why should I vote for Doug Jones? It could happen. But yeah, what kills me is that, you know, some Republicans have taken to defending Roy Moore based upon, you know, that he's denied it, that, you know, their stories aren't lining up, that it's 40 years. But you've got, you know, there are people going on the record, you know, former cops saying, you know, watch out for this guy around high schools. And, you know, he's, you know, be careful if he's walking around in a mall. And so, you know, it's one of these things, and we'll get into this in a little while, this kind of open secret thing that annoys the hell out of me. But, you know, Democrats, what they're doing now is when you sit there and you say something about Al Franken, if you don't even talk about Roy Moore, the way that they come back is sit there and say, well, it's not as bad as Roy Moore. You know, and it's like, why does it have to be as bad as Roy Moore? What Al Franken did can stand on its own. I'm not comparing the two.
I don't think it's worth trying to compare like the awful and more awful.
Right.
It's awful. And it's, you know, it's because, I mean, as far as the accounts of Roy Moore, it's creepy he dated younger people, but I don't think he raped them from what I understand of the accounts. It's just gross and, you know, pedophilia. But, you know, but why am I sitting here having to equivocate this? It's just gross. I don't want to.
Yeah. And
I,
you, have to I know it's terrible.
Well, actually, that's kind of terrible. And that's really terrible. That's like a 9. I mean, it's like the Olympics. Like that's the 9.8 of gross. And that's a perfect 10. You know,
Yeah,
I don't want to get into that business.
It kills me when people sit there and say, or come to me on Twitter or sit and say, well, you're comparing what Al Franken did to somebody who's, you know, engaging in child rape. And I'm like, well, wait a minute. You know, Roy Moore didn't rape anybody, you know? I mean, and I don't want to have to say that. It's kind of ridiculous that
you're
I have to.
Now you're making me defend him.
You're making me defend this guy. I don't want to do that, you know? And it's like, you know, but it's like, be accurate about what he did. Yeah, I mean, the 14-year-old girl thing is awful. And, of course, what he did allegedly to a girl who was 16 at the time, he tried to force, you know, her to perform oral sex, and that's what she alleges. But a couple of the other ones, it was like he tried to get dates with them. They didn't really do anything. So it's like, you know, it's like you can let what he did stand on his own without saying he's child rapist, or, you know, he's a child molester and all that other kind of stuff. what he did with the 14-year-old was completely inappropriate. And anybody who sits there and says, well, Mary was only 13, it's like, stop. I don't want to hear it.
She was also a virgin by the story. I was like, these are some really pathetic pastors.
Exactly.
And that analogy.
And it was a miracle birth. I mean, it wasn't, you know, it's just stupid. But I find the Al Franken thing was hilarious in that, sure enough, and I even said it because she said it in her article. I said, there's going to be people that are going to start going and looking who up Leanne Tweeden is. And finding, I remember, you know, I was in my 20s, I read those stupid stuff magazines and FHM and everything like that, and Maxim and that kind of stuff. You know, I mean, it's a magazine for that age group, and she would be on the cover of those magazines, and she posed nude for Playboy. And it's like, well, so what if she did those things? What is that? Where does that give Al Franken the permission to go ahead and like stick his tongue down her throat?
Yeah, that wasn't actually a significant, like, that wasn't her signing away her right to consent. obviously, yes, she sexualized herself as a being, but it doesn't mean you get to violate her in any way, shape, or form. We get to choose. This isn't that a novel of a concept.
It's amazing, isn't it?
I don't know why we're having to explain this to men. And it's what I find fun is it's always the most virtuous. All of the apologies have been, I've been a strong advocate for women. I'm like, really?
Yeah, that's usually the first thing they're saying.
By the word advocate.
Well, I mean, that goes back to Bill Clinton, you know, because 20 years ago when Bill Clinton was in office, when he was the president, people said, you know, basically it's like, well, he votes the right way. He supports abortion rights. He supports this. He supports that. So we're going to
the knee pads article of we should all thank him personally.
Exactly.
Women.
Exactly.
Yeah, that was some. Well, that's a whole different problem with feminism, not understanding its own point. But that's just another thing. But yeah, the willingness to say, but he agrees with me is as a reason to excuse bad behavior should probably stop about now. Hopefully there will be enough people who start to say, wow, this feels really gross to have to support these people. And the fact is they're not indispensable. You could put Al Franken can be replaced with another Democrat.
Right.
Like it's so low stakes and that yet they're going to let him hold on to it. You know, Frank Conyers, the rep, he can be replaced with another Democrat.
Yes.
There's actually no political downside. And yet we're still having this argument, which, you know, I was like, there's not even a loss if you're a Democrat to get rid of these guys. Like, how easy is this for you to stand up and say they should go?
Right. I mean, if I don't know how the laws are in Minnesota or Detroit, Michigan, because they differ obviously state to state whether their replacements are appointed or whether it's a special election. But even if they're either or, the likelihood that a Republican is going to come along and win a special election in Minnesota is unlikely, and certainly not in John Conyers' district.
No, I that's why I was like, these are very low. Like the political risk for the Democrat Party is so low for them to make a virtuous stand here. I'm kind of surprised they're not.
Yeah. Well, let's shift gears a little bit, because another person who was accused of sexual harassment and ultimately, like, very quickly they took charge of this whole situation is Charlie Rose. Charlie Rose, famous journalist, been, you know, doing his PBS show for decades. Recently, for the last few years, has been part of the CBS morning crew. And story came out, said 8 women he sexually harassed. And we're not talking about just, you know, words or deeds. This was him grabbing and groping and apparently walking around in his birthday suit from time to time, which, you know, I don't know. I don't know what some of these men are thinking, you know, like, let's,
I don't know.
You know, not to get too crude here, but the whole idea of like,
they're so delusional.
Yeah, the whole idea of like, you know, hey, does this turn you on? Watch me, you know, jerk off for whatever, and then hi, oh, hey there, you know, how you doing, Charlie? You're naked. I know. How's it going? I don't know. It just seems kind of. It seems really weird. But the thing with Charlie Rose is that after reading about what had happened. Similarly to the story about Harvey Weinstein, and similar to that of I almost said Kevin Bacon. Kevin, I just lost my complete train of thought here. Kevin Spacey. That they the term open secret, it gets revealed, so that people kind of knew in the industry or at CBS and maybe at PBS that Charlie Rose was like this, that when this news came out, they were not surprised to hear about it because they knew about it. And I guess what really bugs me is that why does it take accusers having to come forward for these people to then finally lose their jobs? Because the thing is, and you can disagree with me, but let me see what you think, is that if it's a quote-unquote open secret, then people in positions of power who had the chance to do something about it, they knew about it as well.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I mean, this is a place where I might, you know, push a little bit on, like, leaning right, where, you know, these companies don't have a lot of women in high positions. I think for men, even if it's an open secret, they clearly don't seem to crack down on it. You saw a similar situation at Fox News.
Right.
And you just wonder, you know, when and it also may be generational, too. Like, you imagine the level one, they're all men likely at the top and they're older. You know, they're not our age. They're not, you know, they're just of a generation where they're probably, it's uncomfortable. They kind of are more used to looking the other way for these things. They're not naturally confrontational. I mean, you think back to the Penn State and that coach and just how everybody knew that stuff was going on. And I can't remember it, but it just seems that it may not be male gender driven. It may also be generational. At least my hope is that the next generation of men wouldn't just kind of let an open secret lie. But I think the second element also appears to be that's consistent in the Weinstein and Charlie Rose story is this perception of indispensable, that, you know, he's a star and he's the show. And so you put up with more crap. I think it'd be nice if the media and the Hollywood industries would realize that no one's indispensable and that you can always replace somebody. But there's lots of money tied to marquee names. And so I think that there's also a financial incentive for them to look the other way, too, because it would be a big deal to have dealt with this. They're going to deal with it now because now it would have had such a fiscal downside for them because of the press.
Right.
You know, I think, unfortunately, it's down to economics, incentives and a generational difference.
Yeah. And you know, it's interesting because I think Dylan Byers of CNN, he tweeted something yesterday. It looks like he deleted it at this point, but he said it was a poorly worded tweet. It wasn't what he was trying to convey, but he was talking about people like Charlie Rose, you know, talking about these icons who suddenly have to be gone. And it's like, kind of like, well, you know, what about the people who couldn't get ahead or whatever, because maybe they were victims of this guy's behavior or they didn't say anything, or, you know, maybe if they knew they would say something that they might have, you know, their career might've been damaged. I mean, this goes back to, you know, to Harvey Weinstein, and I initially had questioned why Lauren Sivin, I think from Fox News, didn't say anything about Harvey Weinstein when he did that thing in front of her, because she was a journalist as opposed to an actress, and then, you know, you come to find out just how much power this guy wielded, not just within Hollywood, but within the media. You know, he had people who had levied accusations against him that he would then go and use gossip columnists that he knew that were friends to kind of attack them and to smear them. And so,
well, and the media in Hollywood, like, are a lot more closely related than we thought. I mean, that's the Weinstein scandal in itself.
Right.
It's, you know, the media covers Hollywood and it's incestuous just a bit. I mean, and obviously media personalities tend to have to be attractive as well. So it's a similar type, if they're on television, of an environment.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I mean, you're right. And so, yeah, it's that kind of thing. And it's just kind of, I grew to understand very quickly why she didn't say anything and why people are afraid to say anything. But more and more of this keeps coming out. John Lasseter, Pixar, has gone to take a leave of absence because apparently he's had issues with sexual harassment and touching where he shouldn't and things like that. And you know, if you think we've seen the end of this, we probably haven't. There's probably a lot of nervous guys out there in the media, in Hollywood and other places that, you know, they're just waiting for that story to come out.
There's like probably 1,000 more open secrets. It's so, yeah, every week it's just kind of like a horror show. You're like,
yeah.
Oh, you know, I don't know, as a woman, I find it's sad, but, it's good. I think that this is happening. And I think I had a similar reaction to Lauren Sivin story too, but it was of the sense of, I understand why women don't speak out, But I question the strategy going forward, because as women move up and have more of a voice and more power in these industries, I think that's the precise, like when these things happen, if you don't speak out, they do it to someone else and they do it to someone else. And I know that that burden can be very high and some women are never going to be in a position of power to do so. But I guess I would suggest if you are in a position of power to do it, like Gal Gadot has done or other people have done, or like Reese Witherspoon has done, where like, I know for Big Little Lies, like they went to that guy at Amazon and he was all like, well, I want to see more boobs and like Nicole Kidman naked in it. And she was kind of like, yeah, that's not really my vision. Moving on. You know, but like that will make the difference is the decentralization of power. The fact that she could shop that show in several places so she didn't have to take that kind of, you know, terrible directive as, you know, to make sure that there was a point in the show where you saw someone's boobs as opposed to telling a good story. Right. These things are what will change it for women. And this is what I think drives me the most insane as more of a right-leaning libertarian female, is that what actually is going to help women in all of these situations is competition, decentralization, capitalism, and the idea that you can have creative destruction. All of these things are going to break down these institutions and give women more power. And I hope at some point they start to see that, and maybe there'll be actually a party they can vote for that cares about that. I'm not sure if there is one right now, but maybe one day.
Yeah, and you know, that kind of brings us back, that circles everything back to the Bill Clinton thing. You know, it's like all of a sudden, you know, I think it was Chris Hayes who first said something about that. He tweeted something. It's like, there's going to have to be a reckoning now about Bill Clinton. And it's kind of like, you know, oh, now, you know, finally the Clintons have, you know, with Hillary's latest loss, somebody said, oh, they're finally, you know, they're finally kind of blown away into irrelevance that they can kind of talk about this. But the way that they're kind of circling the wagons for Al Franken seems to be like they still haven't gotten it. Like they still don't understand. And like you said before, they're starting to do the same thing. And it's like, what are you going to do? 2036, you're going to write, you know, oh yeah, 20 years ago, Al Franken should have resigned.
Well, that's because I hate to say it, but my more negative view of the whole Bill Clinton reckoning was because they want Hillary off the stage. It wasn't because it was time and he's, you know, now it doesn't matter. It's that it has a particular purpose and they want to end her. They want her to stop talking because they want to move on. I actually think that the whole Bill Clinton reckoning is for a political purpose, not that they've actually had some sort of come to Jesus moment about it.
No, absolutely not.
I think they genuinely want her off center stage. And this is the last thing they had to do was to actually deep six the whole legacy, because they still wax on. I mean, Joy Reid just tweeted about the Kennedys, you know, it's right. Like that guy left a woman to die in,
yeah,
you know, under a bridge.
Yeah, no,
and
chasing
the line of the Senate. So
yeah,
they don't
Teddy's
let go
chasing
if it
redemption,
has
she said. That's what Joy, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. Joy Reid tweeted something about the Kennedys, going on about the Kennedys, and she said about Teddy Kennedy, he was chasing redemption.
Exactly. So, I mean, they're not willing to burn the Kennedys down. So
right.
I would presume the reason they're willing to burn the Clintons down is because they want to, not because it's some sort of reckoning.
No, I think you're absolutely right. And a perfect example of that is Kirsten Gillibrand, Senator Kirsten Gillibrand from New York, who was like, oh, yeah, Bill Clinton definitely should have resigned. That was, you know, that, you know, to talk about how terrible it is. And it's like people are sitting there saying, well, here's pictures of you and Bill Clinton, you know, campaigning for Hillary in 2016. You know, you didn't say any of that now, but of course, you may be one of the people that wants to run for president in 2020. So it'd be better if the Clintons kind of went away. So your point about it being more of a political thing to kind of, you know, get Hillary to shut up. I think that's a good theory. I hadn't even thought about that, but I think you make a great point.
I just think it's apparent to me because of the lack of consistency, like 2 days later with Al Franken and anything else. So it's, you know, if they wanted to behave consistently, it'd be one thing, but it seemed like a perfectly coordinated and timed effort across left-wing media because they'd like to move Hillary off center stage.
A very interesting point. So, all right, we're going to take a quick break and we're going to hear from our friends at HelloFresh. And then when we get back, we'll wrap up our conversation here for the Thanksgiving week edition. Fifth Estate. Be right back. Hello, Fifth Estate fans. Jay Caruso here to tell you about our friends at HelloFresh. HelloFresh knows that its customers are busy and loves that they wear their busyness as a badge of honor. While the holiday season can creep toward chaos, there's a festive hustle and bustle you should take time to enjoy. In that spirit, HelloFresh says, go ahead, embrace the hustle and bustle. They will be there to calm the chaos in the meantime. HelloFresh does the shopping, planning, and delivering. So all you have to do is hustle, bustle, and enjoy. Finally, you can enjoy not having to plan dinner, spending money on takeout for an easy night, or worry about gathering ingredients week after week. HelloFresh offers a wide variety of chef-curated recipes that change weekly. All the ingredients come pre-measured in handy label meal kits, so you know which ingredients go with which recipe. You can feel confident when cooking HelloFresh with the simple recipes outlined on pictured step-by-step instruction cards. They offer three plans to choose from: classic, veggie, and family. HelloFresh is delivered right to your door in recyclable insulated packaging. And it's all for less than $10 per meal. I recently got the chance to try HelloFresh meal, and I had to ask myself why I had waited for so long. The difference in quality was clear when I had the Thai spice pork meatballs. You know, the meatballs were tender. The pork was fresh. The ingredients were amazing. It was the same when I tried the Adobo Loco steak. We're talking about steak that is, you know, when cooked properly, according to the instructions they give you, is absolutely delicious, and they give you the vegetables and everything that goes with it. It's terrific. So, what can you do here? Well, HelloFresh has a special offer to listeners of the Fifth Estate podcast. For $30 off your first week of HelloFresh, visit HelloFresh.com and enter promo code Estate30. That's E-S-T-A-T-E 30. One more time. To try HelloFresh and get $30 off your first week, go to HelloFresh.com and use promo code Estate30 at checkout. All right, and we're back. Jay Caruso here with my co-host Amy Otto. We don't have a guest this week. We're just doing a show that's going to lead into the Thanksgiving weekend, and we'll be back stronger than ever next week. We've been talking about Bill Clinton and Roy Moore and sexual harassment. I mean, there's just been, you know, it's like, it was funny because when I went back and I was trying to think of a list of people who've been accused. And then I was sitting there, I was like, oh, I forgot about this one. I forgot about that one. There's been so many since this Weinstein story broke that it's just crazy. And of course, you know, I think there's some of us who are probably like worried about, like, I hope this guy that I really like isn't somebody that gets named or someone like that. It's, you know, it's, you're kind of just hoping for, you know, you're kind of hoping that the bad news isn't going to break. The one thing I want to say about Al Franken, which is interesting, is the difference between, you know, people out there and the Democratic Party. People who are kind of like, again, they're rallying, not, I wouldn't say rallying around him. Well, I mean, the Saturday Night Live writers did. They wrote this letter of support for him. And others have been kind of saying, oh, well, you know, again, using the excuse, he's not as bad as Roy Moore, so he shouldn't have to resign. But there is a poll was done, a recent poll in Minnesota, saying, where 22% of those polled say he should stay in office, 33% said he should resign, 36% said they should wait for the result of a Senate Ethics Committee investigation, and his approval rating now is just 36%. So he's in Trump area with his poll numbers. And just to say, I think the whole Senate Ethics Committee investigation is such a joke. Everybody's like, oh, look, he's inviting an investigation. And I think somebody had pointed out, in like in the last 60 Senate Ethics investigations, no action was taken against the senator. It's because he knows that the fix is in. He knows he's gonna skid. And so, of course, he's going to welcome it because nothing's going to happen to him.
That was just the whole, you know, oh, let's have an ethics committee. I mean, I think the worst thing that was revealed during all this to me was that there's this like actual legislated rule where they pay out all these sexual harassment claims for congressional members. And it's like codified in the law. So we never see any of it. So I was like, I really want to know how much we've all paid out as taxpayers to how from how many congressmen to whom. And that actually was probably one of the worst things that was like revealed for the Conyers thing. I mean, the Franken and the ethics committee is just a dodge for him to like, hopefully he that's basically like, I hope everybody forgets about this and then it dies in a committee. I mean, it's a typical senator move.
Yeah, definitely.
But just the fact that there's like a legislated path for like sexual harassment claims to get paid out in hush money, and they have it like set up like a system. I really hope that someone changes that, because that's insane.
Yeah, from what I understand too, what I've been reading, the process to file a sexual harassment claim, you know, is very archaic and very difficult process to go through. And of course, superiors to, you know, it's like you can't do it anonymously, or there's really no protection. Like the way somebody has to do it is like their name is going to be known to everybody and other people in Congress. And it's like, you know, if they're all going to rally around him, then, you know, if you're, or whoever the accused is, I mean, you talk about the Senate ethics thing. I mean, Bob Packwood, shortly after he was elected and reelected in 1992, had the charges brought against him. It took 3 years for the Senate Ethics Committee to recommend expulsion, and then he wound up resigning. So if anybody who's out there thinks that Al Franken is being, you know, he's taking responsibility by saying he wants a Senate ethics investigation, it's like Amy said, it's a joke. It's theater. It's political theater. Nothing will happen to him, and he knows that, and that's the reason why he's doing it. And that's the reason why he didn't say, I'll step down, because he's going to be like, look, they're going to have an investigation, and if they think that I should be kicked out, then they're not going to recommend expulsion for what he did. You know, this is, you know, one thing about Franken is I think there was another accusation. A woman came out, said that he was at a state fair taking a picture, and, you know, he grabbed her butt. And, you know, of course, people started doubting that, too. Look at the picture. She's smiling. It's like, okay, well, maybe she had the wherewithal not to react with horror when it happened as the photographer was taking the photo. You know, it's like women can do that. You know, it's like, you know, they can, yeah, they can sit there and kind of pretend.
No, men have no idea how often women smile through weird crap that men do. I mean, come on. No, like I hate to say it, but it is confusing signaling to men, but it's almost like it's a weird reflex. And it's a little bit of, I mean, I hate to say it, it's a little bit of evolutionary biology. When a man is bigger and larger than you and threatening, you try and actually look non-intimidating and smile and kind of hope to get out of the situation. And men get persistently confused by this, because they're like, look, she's smiling. I'm like, no, she's like, hi, how do I get out of this crap now? And she's like smiling through that. And it's a weird, stupid tick that women have. And because I've done it myself, like when you're just, it's awkward. And so you smile as like a weird way. And I swear it's like, it's some sort of deep biologic thing to just try and get out of a situation where you're not the physical superior being, and you're in trouble. So you try and look non-threatening and see if you can get away before like they notice. I you know, I can't explain it, but it's I don't think the smiling thing is actually a way to dismiss it. In fact, it might reinforce it because it's awkward. And I think the other thing too is her husband and other people at the time corroborated the story, and she never came forward for like a year or so after it happened. She just told people around her that it happened. And so she had other people who could corroborate it. And she only came forward because she felt like she wanted to say something to support the poor woman, Leanne Tweeden, who had to go out on a limb and say that. She was like, well, I wouldn't have said anything until that happened, because she even wrote something like, I don't think it's comparable what happened to me at all. But, right. You know, I want to stand up and, you know, support her because this happened to me. And she never considered it worth being public about until that moment. So I think it has some credibility.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, a lot of times the people that are sitting there doing the partisan side of this are asking the question, you know, what's their motivation? You know, why wait so long? Why didn't they say this before? And that's the wrong question. You know, the question that's supposed to be asked is, what do they have to gain by coming forward and doing this? And, you know, Leanne Tweeden, you know, she's got a steady gig now as a radio host, and she's married. She has a couple of kids. You know, she's got a good life. She's not doing the single, you know, modeling thing anymore. She'll do some modeling, I guess. But, you know, this young woman from actually lives close by here in where I live in Frisco, Texas. you know, what did she have to gain by coming forward and saying something about it? You know, it's like not like Al Franken is some billionaire that they can extract a settlement from for with a lawsuit. What kind of lawsuit are you going to file? I mean, there's nothing's going to happen there. So it's like, that's the thing. It's like, what do they have to gain? And you know, I don't think anybody wants that kind of attention, you know, where people are going to make an accusation. And what's going to happen is other people are going to go start digging around to see if you've done anything, you know?
No, and I mean, I think if I could explain it to men, it's almost like you bringing up a story or a time where you got owned or, you know, oh, I got beat up this time, or that was really embarrassing. I mean, to women, when it happens to you, it's embarrassing. You don't want to talk about it. And when we bring it up, you certainly don't, the reason they don't publicize it is because it feels embarrassing and demeaning. Then you're highlighting to the whole world, I was demeaned, I'm embarrassed, and I didn't stand up for myself in a way that I wanted to. And this thing happened to me. That's a very awkward thing to do. And I guess if I could put men in seats, like, do you go and highlight to the press that time you got your butt kicked or someone like made a fool of you or you didn't behave and like you didn't defend yourself in a way you wanted and like you got pushed over? That's what it feels like. And I think that's why people don't bring it up, because it's a moment of raising a point where I think you take some culpability because you're like, I didn't do what I needed to protect myself and this thing happened. So you don't want to talk about it. I mean, it's not that person's fault, but I think that's why they don't want to bring it up, because it somehow still feels like a bad thing that happened, that you, because you are a sentient being, you feel like you still try and think about how could I have prevented this. So it's like having to explain, you know, things that, you know, where you failed to protect yourself or your body.
Yeah. And, you know, the whole idea is that, you know, when you start questioning, you know, their motivations and saying, why did they do this? Or why didn't they say anything? Or why, you know, it is the kind of thing that keeps other women from coming forward. If they see that this is the kind of scrutiny they're going to face, they're going to be like, you know what, maybe it's not even worth it to say anything, especially if it wasn't, you know, like this girl who said that, you know, he grabbed her butt, as opposed to somebody who, you know, there's obviously a big distinction between that and somebody who is sexually, you know, who is like, you know, raped or sodomized or something like that. But still, if it's something that they see that other people are blowing off as trivial or saying, you know, well, how could she have like disliked it if she's sitting there smiling in the photo? That's going to be like, well, you know, people are going to be like, you know what, maybe I'm not going to say anything. And that, you know, and I think going back to what you said, that's what we don't want to do, is like, you want to be able to, you know, in order for this to stop, like you said, if you think it's generational, which is a good theory on that. If we want people to stop, then there has to be the mechanism for women to come forward and say, you know, without fear of retribution for doing so. It doesn't mean that the person accused can't defend themselves, you know, because sometimes it is fake. Sometimes it is made up. But, you know, I mean, that will work itself out. And, you know, the thing is, you know, there may be accusations that are credible. There may be accusations that aren't credible. You know, that's for people to decide. But at the same time, I just don't think we should hold back from people, you know, allowing women to come forward and tell a story if they think that it's going to help somebody else, or if they think it's something somebody needs to know about this. And that'll be my final word on the subject. So
I couldn't agree more. I think we need to create an atmosphere where it's okay to say that someone assaulted you, and that maybe something might actually happen. And it's interesting. I guess the Democrats have a good opportunity to demonstrate what their choices would be with about not one but two current challenges they have in both Congress and the Senate. And we'll see if they do. Yeah. I think a lot of the Republicans have actually already spoken out against Roy Moore. I don't know how many high profile Democrats have really taken a strong position on Al Franken at this point. I see him being pushed out.
Yeah. Well, that's the whole thing. It's like, you're going to sit there and, you know, they're waiting. The Democrats are waiting to see if Roy Moore wins. So if he wins and he takes that seat and Republicans don't do anything, like they've been saying, like some are saying, we should expel him the moment, you know, he wins. If they don't do that, then they're not going to do anything about Al Franken. They're gonna be like, oh, look, you know, you got a guy that's sitting there, he's in office, he you know, tried to get it on with a 14-year-old girl. This is not even anywhere near that. So why should he leave? That's what it's gonna come down to. It's gonna be the tribalism mindset, I think.
Yeah, and I think you're probably right. That's probably going to be the outcome, and that's just depressing.
It is.
But
It
that will
is.
probably be the sad stakes of, well, this isn't as bad as your problem. Well, your problem is this bad. Let's argue about how bad these two idiots are.
Yeah.
And that's what we're down to in the Senate, which is fun.
Yeah, a lot of fun. All right. All right, well that's going to do it for this episode. Hey, are you going to watch I mean, you a fan of Planes, Trains, and Automobiles? Are you going to watch that this year the way everybody does for Thanksgiving?
I have actually never seen that entire movie.
Oh
I
my
think no, that's going to
gosh.
freak you out. But I was like, I've watched pieces of it, and I just I'll have to watch it this year.
Yeah, I think I don't know if it's of course what they do is they make it available to stream like in the middle of summer, then come like Amazon will have it on, yeah, you really want to watch this movie in July, but then right around now you'll probably have to pay for it, I just wound up buying it on Amazon, so I'm like, I watch it every year. I'm just gonna do it.
I should probably do see every year for Thanksgiving, typical gender specific thing. I'm cooking. So I don't have time to watch movies, Jay. I've got turkeys and stuffing and things that I'm doing. So these are where my Thanksgiving priorities are.
There you go. All right. All right. Well, that's gonna do it for this episode of the Fifth Estate. We can play a little bit of the music here from the Two Pillows scene from Planes, Trains, and Automobiles as we fade out. All right. So that is gonna do it for this episode of the Fifth Estate. I'm Jay Caruso for Amy Otto. We'll see you next time here on the Fifth Estate.